Thank you, Lindsay. Now, in my mom and dad's guest room, for many years, there were two blue tiles in Dutch Delft blue with the images of ships on them. One named the Kota Inten, the other the Volendam. These were the immigrant ships that carried my family over from the Netherlands to Canada in 1948 and 1951. The Volendam was also significant in some other Mennonite migration. In Paraguay, we encountered one of the Mennonite colonies named Volendam after the same ship that my family came to Canada from Holland. Now, my family's migration story emerges out of World War II. The Netherlands was occupied for 4 years, and the economy was broken. And floods of Dutch emigrants left the country after the war, seeking financial opportunity elsewhere. And many chose Canada out of gratitude for the Canadian contribution towards liberating the Netherlands. The Netherlands is so grateful to Canada. That's why there's so many tulips in Ottawa. My mother's family emigrated in 1948 with 7 children, and my mom and her twin brother were born the year later. They were Canadian babies. My dad's family immigrated when he was 5 in 1951 on the Volendam. Our family tells immigration stories of those early years, full of hard work and hardship. My mom's dad died when she was only 1. My mom's twin also died in those early years. Life was not easy. Kendall's family has migration stories too. The migration story which is most frequently retold has been artistically rendered in a series of collages featuring Mennonite women from the Russian migration. Perhaps you saw that when it came through. Kendall's great-grandmother is featured, and the story is told of how she and her husband had just sold everything at auction from their property in the Ukraine, preparing to emigrate. And her husband, Kendall's great-grandfather, was shot right after the auction, days before the family was to leave. So the Russian Mennonite migration, which is the founding heritage of this church community, was a migration fleeing violence, famine, and war. So I am a child and grandchild of migrants. Kendall is the grandchild of migrants. Where did your family come from? Russia? Italy? India, Thailand, the Netherlands? How many generations have you been in Canada? Look about you. Unless you claim Indigenous heritage in Canada, your personal story is one of migration. Even my own family has experienced migration on a small scale as we migrated from London to Leamington last year, leaving behind one city for a next, for a new life here in Essex County. Now, as I mentioned, the founding members of NLUMC were part of a wave of Russian migrants who came to Canada from Russia after the anarchy and the unrest in Russia in the 20s and 30s. Now, if food preferences tell a story of a people's migration, I like to say that the Russian Mennonite migration, as told by food, is one of Portulchia, Pfeffernusen, Borscht, and Vareniken. So once upon a time, the people in the Netherlands began listening to the preaching of Menno Simons and other Anabaptist leaders. Eventually, they would be called Mennonites. And at holidays, they would eat deep-fried donuts in the New Year and little spiced cookies over the Christmas season, as all Dutch people did and still do. They experienced persecution for their faith, and seeking an opportunity to worship in peace, they went through Germany, where they started speaking German, and gained German converts. And they went on to Prussia and the Ukraine. And they continued to speak German, but started to eat local food like borscht and vareniken. They experienced political turmoil and famine, and then they migrated to Canada, and they brought these food with them as well. Now they also eat pizza and spaghetti, but they still do love their borscht and vareniken, and they still eat deep-fried donuts at New Year's, which they call Portulchia, and Pfeffernusse. Their relatives, who went at the same time to South America, still eat vareniken and Pfeffernusen and oliebollen, but they now have an affection for salsa and hot sauce. So the Anabaptist Mennonite story has always been one of migration. Our Swiss cousins went from Switzerland to Pennsylvania up to Waterloo County in Ontario, and they're still considered Swiss Mennonites. And some Mennonites went from Manitoba to Mexico and back to Canada again, our old colony friends. So migration has a long history of association with Mennonites. We may be settled now, but there has always been a sense that someday, somewhere, we may be on the move. So recently, according to Mennonite World Conference, Anabaptists celebrated 100 years of presence in Latin America and the Caribbean. First came missionaries, then large-scale migrations into the region, then mission by the newly founded churches. And now Latin America is currently experiencing a large displacement crisis, where organized crime, violence, and poverty are forcing thousands to flee their homes. Migrants, including Anabaptists, face hardship as they seek safety. And our sister churches in Latin America are investing in outreach to these vulnerable people. As I mentioned earlier, each year on Mennonite World Fellowship Sunday, we are invited to worship with a focus chosen by a different continent. And this year, the theme of migration was selected by our Latin American Mennonite churches, because migration is such a rising issue in the global south. This is the issue that they chose to worship through and to discuss with their sister and brother churches from across the globe. And they chose the texts that we read today from Leviticus and 1 Peter because these texts resonate strongly with the Latin American experience of seeking justice for the migrant and for their own identity as migrants themselves. Now, our biblical family story is also one of migrants. The first big migration story belongs to Abraham. He left the big city of Ur with his wife, Sarai, in answer to God's call to go. He received a promise of a new land, which was not realized fully until many generations later. But he was the first one on the move. Abraham and Sarah, their son Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob, Rachel and Leah. And then Jacob's son would be forcibly taken to Egypt, a forced migration. And famine would force the rest of the clan to leave Canaan and resettle back in Egypt, migration due to food shortage and famine. In Egypt, the people would multiply and become enslaved, and God would send Moses. And the people would stream out of Egypt across the Red Sea, fleeing ethnic violence and oppression, another migration. The exile, often considered a judgment of God on the people of Israel, was a forced migration of a people's leadership, and many families were displaced throughout the ancient Near East. The 10 tribes of Judah were permanently scattered, and only a small remnant would ever return. The people were displaced when borders were redrawn as a result of war. These were political migrants, ethnic victims. And even Jesus, as an infant, needed to flee the violent threat of local government and flee with his parents to the safety of Egypt. Jesus was a refugee. And the early church, after the fall of Jerusalem, was scattered throughout the Roman Empire. Religious migrants for the sake of religious persecution. Their migration, therefore, though, laid the foundation for the spread of the gospel in those first years. So when we look at the whole of Scripture, we see that migration, those patterns of migration, run the whole gamut through the story. Now, when the Old Testament lays the foundation for how Israel should behave towards migrants, the treatment is based on Israel's own identity as a migrant people. And there are a few primary words to describe migrants in the Hebrew Scriptures. And the first one, and by far the most common, is a word called ger, G-E-R. It's often translated as sojourner. The NRSV translated it as alien. It's a person from another land who lives among the Israelites. It's used 92 times in the Old Testament. And it is always accompanied with clear instructions that the sojourner, the alien, the foreigner, is to be treated equally to the citizens of the land. You should love the alien as yourself, love the foreigner as yourself. That was the text from Leviticus. This is the word that was used in Leviticus 19 today, with many other instructions to care for the sojourner, the widows, and the orphans. They are to be given justice in the land. The words that most connect closely connect with Gare from our own social context, if we think about it. It seems to me that it's migrant or immigrant, refugee, newcomer. So, because Israel was a sojourner in Egypt, they should care for the sojourner in their midst. Because we were once migrants ourselves, we should care for the migrants in our midst. We were immigrants, care for the immigrants. We were newcomers, care for the newcomers. We were perhaps refugees. We should care for the refugees. It is, on a broad scale, an extension of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have had them do to you. Do for those in need what you needed to have done for you when you were in need. The New Testament context, which we're considering this morning, takes a slightly different tack. Two Greek words are used, poroikos and xenos, and they're both very closely related. And poroikos are those who don't have citizenship. So they're here, but they don't yet have citizenship status. And xenos are those who live in one place, but come from somewhere else. Okay? And these folks are what the words to describe the young church. They were displaced, made of primarily displaced people. That's the people that Peter is addressing. The early church is displaced people, people who had to scatter for their faith. And Peter reminds them that this is a status of honor. They are to remind themselves that being foreigners in this world is a reminder that their citizenship is bigger. Their citizenship is with heaven. It reminds me of a gospel song we sang with Soli Deo Gloria last fall. I am a pilgrim of sorrow. And I've heard of a city called heaven, gonna make heaven my home. It's a text, this 1 Peter 2 text, that speaks loudly to those who are displaced, to our sisters and brothers in South America who are experiencing such unrest and strong migration patterns, that we are all, in one sense or another, migrants and pilgrims passing through. And our most firm citizenship is with the heavenly kingdom. We are all aliens and exiles. We are all migrants. Now, it seems to me that we live in a time in history where we are frequently being called upon by media or other campaigns to divide ourselves into us and them. The political context is rife with us and them divisiveness, the Canadians and the newcomers, the city folk and the country folk, and they're set in opposition, the Conservatives and the NDP and the Liberals, the Westerners or Easterners. And in the US, there's a lot of talk about the Republicans and the Liberals. And there's stories about terrifying migrant trains coming up from the southern border of Mexico, who, if you would believe some stories, are going to be the undoing of all that is good north of the border in the US. But if we're to be biblical, if we're to follow God's commandment to show justice to the gair, to the sojourner, to the migrant, we would do well to remember that we were once migrants too, that God's heart will always be soft for those most in need, for the widows, the orphans, and vulnerable persons who are fleeing violence, famine, and war. God desires justice for the poor, justice for the migrant, and God calls all his children to remember that we belong to one another and we're more alike than different. And what does it look like to care for the gair, or the stranger, the sojourner, the migrant, even here in Leamington and Essex County? It seems I don't have to look too far to come up with a relevant context. We've got migrant workers here from all over South America and the Caribbean and further. And sometimes it seems there can be some friction. People can feel unsafe when large groups mill about downtown. We can worry about what's happening to housing or to downtown businesses. But it doesn't do to stick with these grumblings and fears and keep up an us and them dialogue, because that's not what it means to love the sojourner in our midst and care for them. We must move beyond our fear and discomfort towards hope-filled action. It seems to me that loving the sojourner in our midst involves remembering that we were migrants too, that these men have wives and children back home who are looking forward to the paycheck, and even more to their eventual return with stories and gifts from Canada. And I have been strongly encouraged and hopeful when I have participated in two sessions of community consultation regarding increasing our community's welcome to migrant workers through a process called Better Together, Kingsville and Leamington. And there's another meeting scheduled for February, which I'll get out to you on the email. And in this context, I witnessed passionate calls for community education campaigns, educating the public about the economic and social contributions of migrant workers, calls to improve access to social and medical supports, calls to improve translation, build stronger avenues for social connection between long-time residents and international workers. And this is hopeful. This is in line with what the gospel calls us to do. And I know that there are stories in this congregation, some I've heard, many I've not heard yet, stories of care for migrants, stories of positive interactions, of welcome and friendship. In these stories, the gospel comes alive in our own community, the call of God to love the stranger, the sojourner in our midst. For we were all once migrants, and God has a particular heart for those on the move, yearning for them to experience justice and peace. And that is God's yearning for each of us as well. As we go into the coming year and years, I pray that our eyes and hearts might continue to be opened to new ways of welcoming and loving the migrants in our midst, as we were once migrants ourselves. May we find new ways of living out God's call, the golden rule, to love our neighbors as ourselves. For we and or our forebears were once strangers in a strange land too. Not only that, but in a true and spiritual sense, we are always migrants and strangers in this land, citizens of a bigger kingdom without borders, a citizenship which encompasses all humanity, all time and all space, citizens of a heavenly kingdom where Jesus is Lord and justice and peace shall reign eternal. And we are all pilgrims yet towards that reality. May God's kingdom come, may God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.